Prop 1A funds?
I believe so.
Okay.
So yeah, that's where we're at right now. And when they went and started talking to them before we even met, the Coachella Valley didn't enjoy like the idea of merging the two groups with our group with them.
Uh-huh.
So they were trying to figure out how we can get around that. So other than that, that's really all we discussed.
What that is, for those who don't know, is this thing called Prop 1A funds that are available through grants per se or whatever. We have to deal with other agencies and become a block to apply for them. That'll help us with our water infrastructure potential. If we have to put a pipeline into Banning, if we have to put a sewer system in, it's a way that we get money that was allocated through Proposition 1A a few years ago that we have not been able to tap into. So we're trying to work with a whole group of other water districts that are trying to do the same thing in this area. Help that way we can improve our water system without killing the residents in the community.
And we were approved for $980,000.
That's for the past group as well. Okay. Next item, old business, the bailiff. Oh, same old, same old. Operating manager's report, Mr. Louie. Thank you. Hey, I want to get out and go home. I got to pull the catalytic converter out of my car.
I'm going to save my comments for later on in the meeting when we get to the rate and study.
Okay. So you want to table it to later?
Huh?
You want to table it to later?
Okay, yeah, you can put it that way.
Okay. Next item, old business, sustainable groundwater update. Mr. Anderson.
Sure. There was a meeting of the group of agencies that are going to be adopting the memorandum of agreement. And it looks like we're all done with the agreement, and so the plan is for each of the agencies involved, which are the PASS agency, sorry, a little feedback there, Banning Heights Mutual Water Company, the City of Banning, and to a more limited extent, Desert Water Agency and Mission Springs Water District on the east side, all to take the agreement to the boards next month, which means we're going to have to put a public notice in the paper to follow state law. You'll hold a public hearing, and then you folks will have the opportunity to vote to approve that agreement and join all of the other local agencies in managing the groundwater basin. The only two pieces that would be missing are over there on the east side. There's a couple of miles that are in Desert Water Agency over by Windy Point or Fingal Point. And
Snow Creek, I imagine.
Stone Creek's out of this basin. That's the next basin down. So they cut it off right at Fingal Point, and Mission Springs and the Desert, or excuse me, Mission Springs Water District and the PASS agency are going to manage the Verbena area, that one little square mile over there. But the rest of this, all the way from there, all the way to the Beaumont city limits, basically, will be under the management of this group that you're going to put together, if he's agreed to.
Sustainable Groundwater Act. Our illustrious governor, Mr. Brown, said, you will do this, this, and this. If you don't, we'll have somebody do it for you. We have to set up a plan to maintain the water and make sure that we have supplies for our communities. And basically, what we've had to do is put a committee together with other water districts, separate of that other one, Prop 1A. It's like one government agency, you know how they are? They're one little one, another one, another one, and they just keep stacking them on top of us and causing issues. That's what that's about, all right? Any questions you can ask the man, you can ask us afterwards. If you need individual questions about it, we can all answer them for you. Okay. Next item of discussion is the custom return to the Bailiff Ranch petition to remove selected parcels. Have you any comment on that, Mr. Louie or Ms. Ellie? You heard it. Or you?
Well, again, I'd like to remind the board, if you forgive him, we got a whole line of other property owners coming to you asking for the same. I have not heard from Mr. Bailiff. I'd like the board, maybe we can perhaps table this and then make it a hard decision next month, and I'll reach out to him unless council has another suggestion.
Well, the other option, obviously, folks, is you could just deny this request right now. I mean, it's up to you. I think this is the second opportunity you've had given him to opportunity to show up, but I don't know if whether we reached out to him in the month of February or late.
It was in January.
Yeah. So you've reached out to him. It's up to the board's discretion whether you want to table it and consider it next month or just deal with it today.
Calvin, did you reach out to him between now and the last meeting?
Did I?
Yeah.
No, I did not. I have a record here, this is in your package, I think, that I reached out to him, and he actually returned the phone call in my email it was on January 4th of this year. And again, he didn't appear at the last...
We wanted him to give him an opportunity to come speak before the board.
And again, he failed to, you know, appear. In January 14th.
Well, I thought from last meeting we wanted to reach out to him and tell him, you know, if he wanted to come in. But we haven't reached out to him since the last meeting.
It's up to the board.
I make the motion we table it for one last month. That will be his third time.
I second that. Can we reach out to him again and give him another chance?
No, email him and call him. How's that?
Thank you. That would be perfect. Thank you.
Okay. The Director Bowie?
Aye.
Director Israel?
No.
No? Director Wargo?
Aye.
Director Davis?
No.
Director Link?
No. Okay. That motion fails. Now we need to either motion to just close it as it is.
I make the motion we go ahead and deny it.
Okay.
A second.
Director Bowie?
No.
Director Israel?
Aye.
Director Wargo?
No.
Director Davis?
Aye.
Director Link?
Aye. Next item on the agenda is board direction regarding water rate study, selection of water rate structure, implementation, and related items. We have a public comment. Do you wish to make it before or after all the information is disseminated?
After, if I could, sir. I'm just not familiar with it.
That's why I'm giving you that opportunity. Okay.
Hi, my name is Greg Henry. I'm here from NDS again. There's not too many of us, so as I'm going through, if you have any questions, let's just go ahead and stop as we go and answer them.
Okay.
Try to get a little.
I'm just going to ask if I'll try to pay attention to Ernie. If you have a question, what we did last month or the last meeting is kind of an open forum. I'm just going to afford you that opportunity since you weren't here last time. But we're just going to keep it on an orderly, continuous action, please.
Okay. So, an overview of a rate study. Stop me if you've seen this before. What is a rate study? It's a financial plan which tells you where your expenses are going and where your revenue needs to go. It's a cost of service analysis. It tells you who needs to be paying. And it's a rate design that figures out how you're going to collect your revenue. So step one is that financial plan. So you have a financial plan funding priorities. It starts with O&M. You've got to pay your bills first, so that you can keep operations going. Next, you pay off your debt. Then you pay for new capital. That's improving or replacing any existing infrastructure. And finally, you fund your reserves. That's like building your savings. It's important to have at least a minimum emergency fund so that if bad things happen, you have cash on hand to make repairs, to replace infrastructure, to fix things. So we start just looking at existing revenue versus O&M expenses. So as you can see, O&M expenses are expected to increase over time. That's inflation in action. what we did to project those numbers is we went line through line through the budget, and we assigned each item to a category, and we inflated that each item at a unique factor related to the type of expense that it is. So the most common example is fuel. Fuel is inflated, and energy were inflated at different rates than personnel costs were.
Just a minute, please.
Yes, sir.
Ernie, if you want to sit at the table up here where you can use the desk to take notes, and it's easier for you to see the screen.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
So there's not any increase in revenue. There are places where you might see an increase in revenue. That would be due to growth. So if you have a lot of growth, you're going to have more people paying for things, you'll have revenue going up, but flat here. So you have nothing to fight inflation with, but raising your own rates causing more inflation. So already you can see that the financial situation for the district is not great. You have difficulty even funding your own end currently. So the next bit is debt service. The district has two loans. Both of them are, you can see that the end coming, but they're not super near term. And together they represent about $130,000 worth of expenses. So we go ahead and stack those on top of the O&M. This is where the current shape of the district's cash flow really becomes clear. Those are both expenses that you just cannot avoid while you're still gonna do the thing that you're supposed to do. There's just not a whole lot you can do to get around those two things. And this year, without a rate change, it's a nearly $200,000 shortfall just in those two expenses. And it's projected by the 2022, and again, these are just, we're guessing. They're not terrible guesses, but they are guesses. We're expected that the district will be maybe $400,000 short each year, just trying to fund O&M. The next part is capital improvement program. The district is planning to buy a vehicle this year, has some property purchase and prep. There's a meter replacement program. It's going to begin next year. We plan to begin next year and will be ongoing. This is an important part of maintaining your infrastructure. You need to have your meters reading accurately. This is an incredibly important part of fairness. As mechanical meters degrade, they read low. So your neighbors may not be paying for their full fair share of their consumption unless everybody's on a newer meter. Well maintenance, if the wells aren't working, you're not producing water. And this is all just to set you up for some additional CIPs that are beginning at the end of the rate period, out in 21-22. So you have these larger pending capital projects, which aren't even part of the existing rate study. You have some stuff that you're hoping you will get Prop 1 grant money to fund. If you do, that's awesome. That keeps the payment off the ratepayers' backs, but if you don't get the grant funding, or the grant funding comes in at less than what you're hoping, you still need to do those projects. So you need to have that in mind as you're starting to set up your rates, that you may have those expenses larger than you're hoping. And then there's some additional pipeline upgrade and modifying the ice house so that you can get the full use and utility out of it, which you're already invested in, you have some cost to take advantage of. So when we add those additional CIP projects there onto the top, and I gotta tell you, compared to many districts, most districts, 99% of the districts, you have very small capital expenses sitting on top of your rates. There's a lot of places where I've been recently where their CIP projects represent 50% of what their costs are. So it's another whole blue bar sitting on top of the top there, because they've gotten so far behind on the capital, and it's just incredibly expensive once you start digging in to get going on that stuff. Okay, so I think this is a pretty good stopping point. If anybody has any questions about what's going on with the financial plan, this is just the expense side.
You see a little bit about what your current revenue is, but all we talked about is expenses. Does anybody want to ask me anything?
Mr. Saldana?
Thank you, sir.
Yes, would you come up so that you can, everybody can hear your questions? I'm sure that other people have the same concerns.
Mr. President, after Mr. Saldana has finished with his comment, I have a PowerPoint presentation also.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I noticed that there was some type of meter replacement. I thought that our district just went through a meter replacement, so I was curious as to what that entailed.
I'm gonna put that over to Calvin. I don't believe that you've gone through and started replacing the residential meters yet.
Only 60% of the communities had meter replacement.
And my second part of that question is there's there was an indication of a new well, and I was just curious if that location of that well would be already established, or was it something that they were just going to look into?
That has not been determined. That's a Prop 1 grant money situation, and we're in the process of just even applying for the grant money to research a location and also a test well once we determine the location. That's provided if the state grants us the grant money.
Thank you.
That's basically part of that's a wish list.
All right. So the next bit are your reserve targets. Again, this is your personal savings account. It's like your checking account. But you want to have some cash in them so that if bad things happen, you can pay for them. For transitioning, currently the target is 90 days O&M. For transitioning to a 180 days of O&M. That's pretty typical, especially given the current state of your CIP, your infrastructure, and not knowing if or when a break is going to happen. It was incredibly expensive, so you need the cash, because if the line breaks, you got to pay to fix it now. So you don't have any ability to go for financing or grants or anything else. Need the cash to make the work happen. It's the same reason that we're going for 6% of that assets. Currently, you don't have any money assigned to capital rehab and replacement. So both of those targets are moving the agency, the district, towards having larger cash reserves than it has right now. That's the first step of getting into proper fiscal shape so that you're ready to transition into a more active CIP program at the end of this 5-year rate period, which is when the grant money is maybe coming in, or you have your eyes on when you're going to start doing maybe some major pipe replacements, that sort of thing. So this is just the first step in getting into appropriate fiscal shape for the future. And it's worth noting right here, the beginning of this year, the agency had nearly $700,000 worth of cash on hand, and just this year depleted itself down to $400,000 worth of cash. So you lost nearly half your reserve in 1 year with no major infrastructure expenditures, no major breaks driving an infrastructure expenditure. So that's how risky your financial situation could be. If something like that happened again, you're basically down to no cash. So over the next 5 years, we're suggesting that the district slowly transition to holding more cash than it currently is trying to target, and to actually get to the target level. So at the end of the 5-year period, the district will have about $1 million, hopefully, cash on hand. So what does that do to the rates? The rates need to reside above your actual expenses in order to fund the reserves. So the red dotted line there now is your rate revenue. You can see it's increasing over the straight dark gray line. That's what your revenue would be should you not increase your rates at all. And again, just to go over it real quick, the blue is the O&M, the orange is the debt service, the green is your capital expenditures, and then the gray is your sending money into your reserves so that you can be ready to handle future problems. In general, you're transitioning from about $1.2 million in revenue to $1.8 million in rate revenue. Anybody have any questions? All right, cost of service analysis. This is mostly just not great to look at. It's tough. Cost of service is, you know, how are we going to figure out, this is more of an academic exercise, a little bit of thought process, how are we going to assign costs to customers in a way that's fair? We do that by first looking at the revenue requirements, and then we break the expenses into two categories, fixed costs and variable costs. So variable costs are made up of commodity costs, and we're going to go right to left this time just to mix it up from what we did last time. We're going to do commodity costs first. Those are costs that change as consumption changes. So the biggest one of those is the energy you use to pump the wells. So if you pump the wells less, you spend less money on energy, it's a commodity-related cost. It's related to the commodity of water. So that changes when you have a mandate from, say, the state or this new GSA that you're participating in to cut consumption, and you have to go to your customers and say, hey, we need conservation. Those costs will go down when the customers hopefully respond to your request to conserve. The next component are the fixed costs. Those costs don't change. It doesn't matter if you sell a drop of water or a 100,000 HCF of water. These costs are pretty much fixed. They're related mostly to capacity costs, that first item there on the left side, on the left and right again. Capacity costs are mostly infrastructure costs. So that is the cost to manage, install, maintain, and control the pipe and infrastructure in the ground that gets the water from the basin into the tap. Almost all of those costs are fixed. It doesn't matter if you don't sell any water, the people that you need to run maintenance are fixed. The cost to, you know, build, install, and monitor that infrastructure is fixed. And, you know, the well itself is a fixed, it's a fixed cost. The second area of fixed costs are customer costs. Those are all the costs associated with getting a bill to a customer. So it's reading the meter, it's the postage, it's the person at the desk who's, you know, inputting the meter reads and generating the bills, all the customer-related costs, answering the phone when customers call to ask about their bill. And then the final category is a special, it's like carved off that category for fire protection costs. Those are costs associated with fire protection meters. The district, I think, has two. A lot of districts have a much higher percentage of their meters that way. So because those types of meters are different from a regular meter, you want to section them off so that they're not overcharged, because they're, you know, hopefully they never get used, right? Okay, so we went through the budget, we categorized each line item towards what percentage we thought it was a capacity, customer, fire protection, or a commodity related cost. We came up with those totals right there. So you can see about 77% of the costs are capacity related. That's very normal, especially for agencies that pump. So the agencies that run their own wells have a higher fixed cost than agencies that are buying their water on, say, the open market, or have other means of getting their water. So that 16% commodity cost is basically your electricity and your chemicals. Altogether, it means about 84% of your costs are fixed and 16% of your costs are variable. That's really important to know when we take the next step in rate design, because in some sense, the best rate design is a rate design where you're not constrained by consumption. So if consumption goes up or down, the district is safe. To be that way, your revenue would match your costs. So 84% of your revenue would be fixed, so that regardless of what consumption does, all your fixed costs are paid with fixed revenue. So that's, you know, would put you in the upper 1% probably of agencies with what's fixed, what's variable, but that's what a rate, consumption neutral rate design would look like. So the next bit of, so we have the cost, we have figured out what, who's fixed, who's variable, and then the next question is, well, who has to pay what? We do that by breaking your customers into customer classes or groups. You're in a customer class or a group if you have like, use, and usage. So we have three groups in this class. In this case, we have single-family residential that makes up your vast majority of your customers. They're one class together. We have commercial non-SFR, so that's pretty much every other meter except for contract meters, because you're under a contract that says this is what you're going to charge for those meters. So they're in their own customer class. So we look at, so we look at the components of each customer class related to how they use their water to figure out how costs should be assigned to that customer class. So just real briefly, one of the biggest drivers of how costs should be assigned to a customer class is peaking factor, which is a fancy word for saying some people don't use their water all the time. And you have to build a system big enough so that when the most use is happening in the middle of August, it's probably right, you're using the most water, the system is built to handle August consumption. However, in February, when it's raining outside and no one's irrigating, a lot of your system is sitting fallow. It's not being used. Well, that doesn't matter. You still have to pay for all of those costs. So customers who use very little water sometimes and a lot of water other times, that's high peaking factor, they put a strain on the system because you're only collecting money in some sense when they're using the system, but they're causing costs when they're not using the system. So you need to scale them such that for a fair rate, they need to pay more when they are using the system to cover the fact that they're not using the system all the time. That's related to peaking factor. So, you know, single family residential is normally right around the middle of the road for peaking factor, right? Because you have some significant amounts of irrigation, and irrigation is really the main driver of peaking factor. And some commercial customers usually, in agencies, would like lots and lots of commercial customers. You'll see commercial customers who are like a soup factory, right? Its water use is consistent. It uses the same amount of water because it's making soup all the time. It's not doing anything else. So it's real consistent, no peaking factor. And then you have, you know, some cases where you have enough of them, you'll have irrigation meters. So they're purely for outdoor use, super high peaking factor. Middle use in the winter and a lot of use in the summer. So those different segments need to be charged a different rate. And that's sort of what we're looking at here, why we broke everybody into these different classes. Okay, rate design. So we have rate design components, the first of which is the number of customer classes. Then you have how you're going to collect your fixed revenue, and how you're going to collect your variable revenue, and how much you're going to collect fixed versus variable. So number of customer classes we just talked about. There's three. For fixed rate methodology, we're going to use max meter flow, or to use a fancy word here, hydraulic capacity. What that means is that a meter is rated for a maximum amount of use, and we want to charge part of the fixed fee based off of what that maximum use is, because the system that sits behind that meter is designed to be able to provide that maximum flow should it need it. And then for variable rate methodology, we're talking about using both a flat rate for non-SFR customers and a tiered rate for SFR customers. And this is, so these are both changes from what you're currently doing. Currently, you're not using the max meter flow to assign your fixed rate charges, so we're making a change. And then currently, also, your commercial customers are under a tiered rate. We're changing that to move them to a flat rate because generally that increases equity. It's more fair. because of their use pattern differs so much from single family. Using the single family rate is generally considered unfair. And then for fixed versus variable, we don't know yet. The PowerPoint presentation is going to show you three options. They're the same three options we talked about last time, and we did it. You can pick one of those three, hopefully, or you can pick something halfway in between them, or you can pick something totally different. It's sort of up to y'all. Okay, so we just talked about that hydraulic capacity factor or max meter flow. So what this chart is designed to do is show you how each meter is going to be impacted by that change. So currently, the ratio of like what a 6-inch meter versus a 1-inch meter pays is the height of the green box. So it's all based off of the 5/8 inch meter, because that's what you have the most of. So let me start with there. So one 5-inch meter, a 6-inch meter currently pays about 16 times what a 5/8 inch meter pays, and that's a lot. But we're recommending that you move it to more like 45 times what a 5/8 meter pays, and that's related to that maximum flow capacity, because the whole system that sits, all everything you've got is built and designed to give them that max meter flow should they ask for it. So they need to pay for the fact that the system is built behind there for that demand.
So what you're saying is the 5/8 meter, I'm going to use just an arbitrary number of flow, 100 gallons per,
right,
per hour. Just that,
yep.
Whereas the 6-inch meter will flow 60,000 gallons.
Right, so it's 20 gallons per minute for a 5/8 meter. And then it's 40 times that, so is that 800 gallons per minute in a 6-inch meter. So the, because, and just to get fancy with math, which is my background, sorry, because flow is related to area, and when, if you vaguely recall how you did area back in high school, it's pi r squared, so the radius squared. So the impact of increasing the radius of the meter or the width of the meter even a little bit causes a huge change in the amount of water that can go through that meter. So the scale is not linear. It's not even, it's more like an exponential scale. It's more similar to. So this is the first change that we're recommending. This is to improve equity and to ensure that your larger metered customers are paying their fair share for the system. Okay, the variable rate, again, like we talked about, we're recommending that you move your commercial non-SFR customers to a uniform rate. That's the big change. So previously they were under a tiered rate. We're moving them to, or we're recommending a move to a uniform flat rate, because a tiered rate is designed to look for efficient use of the water, right? That's why you have a tiered rate. You're saying the more water you use, the more inefficient that you're being with that water, which is why I feel like I need to charge you more for it. Commercial customer, you don't really have a good sense of what they're doing with the water, and there's so many different varied uses, you can't make a judgment on whether or not they're being efficient with that water, and so you generally charge them a uniform rate. The contract customer is already on a uniform rate. And then finally, for the tiered rate, you currently have four tiers. We're recommending that you move to three tiers. The tier rate points are based off of some metrics. The first tier is what your average winter consumption is. So that's a good metric to assume indoor use. So the first cheapest water for your customers is for their indoor use, which is, you know, efficient use of indoor water. The second tier breakpoint at 14, and that's where your average summer use hits per customer. So for everything from 7 to 14, we're assuming is efficient outdoor use. So that's, you know, watering your yard, keeping it, you know, based off of what the average neighbor does. Now, of course, it's a big system. Some people are going to have more or less. And it's, you know, it's hard to be fair and equitable for everybody. It's a broad class, and so we're trying to do our best to be the most fair for the average person. And then finally, the third tier is for everything beyond that 14 units of summer use. So there's some rules that came out, some legislation that happened that have really limited your ability to set your tiered rates and where the tiered rate points are. We have to have some sort of rationale for why we put the breakpoints where we did. Like we talked about, we used winter and summer consumption. And then you have to explain why the water in each tier costs more than the water in the tier before it. So that's that happened 2 years ago. It changed. Previously, people would say things like, well, I want the water in the third tier to be five times what the water in the first tier is. I know I need to collect $1 million. How does that all shake out? And they just sort of arbitrarily picked what the different rates were. Can't do that anymore. You need to have justification for why your different tiers cost different amounts of money. In this case, it goes back to exactly what I was talking about before. The higher the tier, the more peak that's associated with that tier. And so the more infrastructure cost it's associated with that water. So that's why that water costs more. You spend less time in that third tier, so whenever you do wander up into the third tier, you need to pay extra for the fact that the system is designed to let you get into that third tier. Right? So
this is all per Prop 218.
Prop 218, and the water rate stuff is really related to San Juan Capistrano, which was a recent, I think it was end of 2015.
Supreme Court.
Yeah, Supreme Court ruling about exactly a tiered rate case and why water costs more in the higher tier than in the other. So the final component we have here is fixed versus variable. So your current rates are 60-40 fixed versus variable. So 60% of your revenue is fixed. 40% of your revenue is variable. So we were discussing your current expenses are at 83% fixed. So the recommendation of NBS is and staff is to start at your current and the other ones to consider moving you in a more fixed direction to make the district more resilient to conservation because, you know, like you said, the state government is weighing more and more in on these sort of things. Conservation mandates will likely be more frequent, especially as you join a basin that's being managed by an agency that you have a say in but don't control. So your ability to, and customer demand may change. I mean, you know, as time passes, people may change what they're planning as they, in their yards, as they recognize that grass is difficult to maintain in a desert.
That's why money is the same color. Goes right out the door. Right.
So the district needs to be resilient to long-term conservation trends and emergency conservation demands. So these sort of rate structures, B or C, would make the district more resilient than it currently is. Just real quick, I want to say that the downside to moving, so that's great. You want to be more resilient to customer conservation, that sort of thing. The downside to that is by putting more costs on the fixed customer, fixed charge, you limit people's ability to change their bills. Right? So the more revenue that's fixed, the less you can control what happens to your bill through your own consumption. So that's the balancing act. Right? There are definitely people in your community who would like to have a 100% variable revenue charge because they don't use very much water, and the people that do, there's some thought that that's fair. I mean, that seems fair. The more water you use, the more money you pay, and if I don't use any water, then I don't pay anything. The thing to remember is that the infrastructure exists all the time and costs money all the time regardless of consumption. So that's there's some balance. So here's some rate tables. We have three slides with rate tables. Let's just look real quickly at the 5/8 inch charge for fiscal year 15-16. So this is your first change. Under the 60% fixed, it doesn't really move at all because you're going to be collecting some revenue through the variable charge and the larger meters are going to be paying a larger share. So that first move has the least impact on the fixed portion of the bill there. However, it's important to remember that that first first unit of consumption now gets charged, whereas it previously did not. So again, this is, so even though you're collecting, say, more money through the fixed, you want to give people the ability to manipulate their bills and change their bills based on their consumption. The best way to do that is to charge them for all the water that they use.
Are you guys following how this is breaking down?
Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. Are you following, Ernie, what they're saying?
I have a question for you.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll go ahead. I told you I would afford you the same thing everybody had last month. I know you've been ill, so.
Thank you, sir. I don't see the usage of the 500 cubic feet is what we used to get. And I see that being taken away by, you know, the fact that the infrastructure has to be paid for in order to be, you know, variable versus fixed. But I just don't see it lending itself to helping the people of this community because of what exists, the poverty and the low-income sector that exists here in this community. So I see it in the future when there's more buildings and when, you know, there's more development. But as of right now, just...
Well, you raise an excellent point. Everyone's bill, when you increase the rates, is going to go up. So there's no real way for the district to avoid making people pay more for their water. In order for it to be able to provide water, because the costs go up regardless of what, you know, the district chooses to do with its revenue.
Did you see how much it would go up? Up to 500 cubic feet, it would go up $5.65.
No.
So. And basically, you know, everybody says free water. You get first 500 free. Well, it's just worked into the price, the original base rate. And basically what we're doing is, based on what they're saying, is we need to make a differentiation. Because what happens is there are some people that only use 200 cubic feet of water, right? So we're going to raise the rates no matter what because we have to make our bills. If they're only using 200 feet of water, their bill is actually only going to go up $2.30. Whereas, like me, just the other day, I was out there with the horses and I kicked the pipe and broke it. I got this. I went out and fixed it. Then a friend of mine went out and feed and said, yeah, the water's been running. When you fixed the pipe, the glue didn't set. So now, guess who's got a big water bill this month? Yeah. Anyway, so I'm screwed by my own big plot of poppy feet. But so the idea is that they want it, and the variable needs to be differentiated for basically more equitable. I don't know how many people that's going to affect that are under the 500, but the rate is going to go up no matter what for everyone.
And I think, you know, the first 500 cubic feet is what, 575? So if you were to think, okay, if we want to maintain our current structure where we give the first five units are baked into the cost, it would raise the fixed charge, say, not 575, maybe 450, and that 450 would be charged to everyone, regardless. So if you use three, you're now paying for part of everyone else's five units. That's the reason that we're making the change, because we're trying to make it more fair for the people who use less. It feels backwards. It feels like we're taking away the free water. What we're really doing is giving people who really truly want to conserve significant amounts. I mean, not having under 500 units is rare. Those folks that choose to do that will now get a break on their bills, whereas they wouldn't if we baked it in. They would have to pay as part with everyone else for the first 500 cubic feet. So that's the biggest change. That's why we did it that way. And I understand that there's a desire to have a fixed amount of money every month. If you want to know what your bill is going to be, and you're going to stay under the 5 units. And that's fair. I think you could budget as if you were going to use the full 5 units every month. And if you happen to come in under, and that's extra money in your pocket, So your ability to know, okay, if I use 5 units, it's going to be 575, and put that on and budget right there, get you the same thing as having the district to decide for you what your allocation is going to be. But it puts more control in the hands of your customers, which is, I think, good.
And the lower rate, we raised up 200 cubic feet. So now instead of it being 5, the proposed break is now 7.
That's another great point, which is, you know, designed so that what you're doing now is also, so you're giving people who use very low amounts of water, those are generally households with not that many people in them, you're giving them a break in the ability to control their bills. Which, by moving the first breakpoint up and identifying indoor use, you're giving people who have larger families also a break, because they're going to be using up against that 700 cubic feet, probably over the top. You know, if you have 3 or 4 people in your house, it's tough to stay under the 7, but they have a wider range where they get at that cheaper water. So again, by doing both of those things together, you're helping your two major components of your customer class, I think.
I can also ask this question. One of my other concerns is that in the past, I've seen a lot of people in our community here have problems with the infrastructure that's currently here. It's old, and in a lot of cases, it gets broken. In that case, in this system that's been created, they'd be in the higher tiers because of the fact that the water would be running. They wouldn't know that some of them are renters, and they wouldn't know that the water's been running for so long. Right now, they get maybe a $500 to $800 bill because of the water having ran for X number of, amount of time. With this system, I just see that being exponentially higher to, instead of $800, $1,600. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people I've noticed and not only lost their properties, but have lost their properties to people that work in this district. So that concerns me because it's well documented that the individuals that approach these people after this happened to them are members of this community, or members of this district that work for this district. So it concerns me because it just seems like we'll be losing a lot of people in our community that are going to move out. There's property owners here that are going to miss out. And eventually, we're going to have a lot less people paying into this system and a lot bigger burden on just the smaller individual.
So that's a great point. So I think it's important to note that the infrastructure itself for the water district ends at the meter. So while the infrastructure for Cabazon Water District is aging, once you hit the water meter itself, everything beyond that is the infrastructure of your property, and of course the individual property owners need to be responsible for that part. Part of what the board is discussing is whether or not a leak break, a leak fairness component needs to be added to the rate structure, where if you have a leak and you have, normally say 15 units of water and then randomly you have 200 units, I guess it would be 20,000 units, 100 cubic feet of water. So a lot of water all of a sudden 1 month, and you go into your yard and you find the broken pipe. And so there exists relief for that the district could consider as part of a separate ordinance, in which they would look into how they would go about providing relief for people who have unexpected leaks. Normally it involves some sort of like proof that, so you have to show that it's different than your normal amount of consumption, and you have to show that you've got it fixed. Either somebody came to fix it, or you bought the materials necessary to have it fixed. Mm-hmm. And then they'll usually also check the meter. They'll go out and look at the meter and see if the dial is still spinning. If the dial is not spinning, they'll know that the leak is fixed. So those are components that can go into some sort of leak relief consideration. It's also worth noting, though, the third tier is higher than the current fourth tier. But but not so much, right? It's 20%, less than 20% on that rare case, right? Where you have a large amount of leak. So that This rate structure, the difference for the one-time leak bill is not so much different than what it would have been before. It's a longer term impact, right?
Well, what you just mentioned would definitely alleviate my concern. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take 10 minutes.
Sure.
So, 7:15.